Hello and welcome to the Great Stories Podcast. I'm Charles Morris, and I know many of us were looking forward to something better in 2021. But it hasn't started off the way we hoped. With the chaos at the Capitol and the pandemic still in our midst, I think we all need to take a moment to pause and to reflect on what it means to love one another. To love like Jesus loved. And for that, I'm returning to a conversation I had with a longtime friend, Paul Miller. If you've ever heard me talk about my old pastor and mentor, Jack Miller, then you might not be surprised that his son Paul wrote a fascinating book on how to love like Jesus, called A Loving Life. Back in 2014, we used his book as a springboard for our conversation exploring what the Old Testament book of Ruth calls Hesed love. You might better know it as unconditional love. Either way, I pray that this conversation will inspire you to love your neighbors, even if they don't love you back. And just before we meet up with Paul Miller, please remember to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode of Great Stories. And don't forget to rate our podcast and maybe even leave us a kind note. You can also sign up for our newsletter at haventoday.org. All of this goes to help us reach others with a great story that's all about Jesus. Welcome again to Haven Today, where we're coming to you from Pennsylvania on the East Coast, and I'm sitting down with an old friend of mine. I'm Charles Morris, and with me is Paul Miller. We've had him on the program more than once talking about prayer. And Paul, I just want to say welcome again to the program.
It's great to be on again, Charles.
I wanted us to talk about a new theme. You do seminars, you've written books, you've written a new book. We'll talk about that. The new book is actually called A Loving Life in a World of Broken Relationships. We'll put your website up on our website if people want to get in touch with you later. I think we live in a day where nobody really understands what love is. So why don't we just start? Let me ask you, what is love?
You know, Charles, I think one of the things that confuse people is I like the word texture, that they're actually not aware of the texture of love. Like, what's the feel of love? And one of the primary characteristics of love is that love lands, that it narrows the life. Like, you think of God's love for us, it lands, it narrows, as it were, the life of the second person of the Trinity. He lands in Bethlehem as a 6-pound Jewish boy in a cave on the side of, at a specific time, place, history, parentage, and it narrows the life. And so what people do is when they begin the work of love, they encounter that constriction, and then they recoil from it, thinking something's wrong. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so it's just really helpful for people to be aware of that, that to begin to love is to lose freedom. And so, and what the modern mind does, especially the younger you are, you recoil from that loss of freedom, and you want to preserve the freedom, and you're afraid of the constriction. And what happens is the person never matures until you're constricted. That the very thing I'm afraid of, which is losing my life, is what I gain. I mean, you see, does that make sense?
Yeah. And of course, the world, of course, today would define maturity in a whole different way.
Yeah.
I fear that too many Christians are being, well, they're buying into a love that's not a biblical sort of love. I mean, do you hear this as a head of a ministry?
It's an inhaling of the spirit of the age. Just recently, a woman goes to a strong evangelical church, been married 2 or 3 years. She told a friend of mine who had been discipling her that she thought she had outgrown her marriage. And when I heard this, I couldn't stop laughing. I thought
it
was so funny.
I'm sorry to be laughing.
It was, and I know it's terrible if you were the husband, poor guy, but it's a classic modern move in that she cloaks her selfishness with a mask of maturity, as in I've outgrown, you know, something that was immature, and I've kind of risen, and it's incredibly immature.
And there's a superior air to that.
Oh yeah, it's very superior. Yeah.
But let me quickly insert something else here, though. Sometimes somebody does need to leave a marriage.
Yes,
right?
I mean there are times where, let's just say, your spouse commits adultery, is unrepentant.
You're being beaten up.
You call the police. It's not like
you
but actually, I think most marriages and relationships, they struggle at the much earlier stages, recoiling from the cost of love. As they encounter the work of love and they begin to feel the pressure that love brings on the life, which might be just the pressure of living with a really critical spouse, who, when you go to that spouse and talk to their critical spirit, they criticize you more. And so to try to deal with it further entraps you. And how do you endure when you're not getting any love in
return?
How
do you still love that person?
Yes.
And you're supposed to do that if you're a Christian.
Yeah.
Paul, you write about this in the early pages of that new book that you wrote. And it's a unique kind of love that we don't hear much about. There's a Hebrew word for it. So let me...
The word is pronounced chesed, but you kind of spit when you say chesed
yeah. myself.
But we'll say chesed.
All right.
But oddly enough, what the Bible calls us to do is embrace that work of love, because chesed love combines two ideas. It combines love, the affection of love, with the idea of commitment. So it's a setting of the will to love. I call it love without an exit strategy. And so if you're doing chesed love, then your spouse is cranky with you. You don't retaliate by withdrawing because you've set your will to love. And you think that's unfair, and I say that's the character of love.
And we should back up a little bit, too, and say this is an expression of God's love first for us.
That's right.
It's the most common line in English where hesed, that very difficult word to translate, is translated as the love of the Lord endures forever.
Yes.
In fact, there's one whole psalm towards the end of the Psalms that it has a line, but then the next line is chesed.
Yeah, chesed, like Jeremiah 3:12, God says, I am chesed. And because he's chesed, he sticks with us. And that sticking with us leads him to the cross. It leads to the Trinity being going through incredible pain. As the Father loses his Son and the Son loses the love of the Father on the cross. So I've talked about this idea of the texture of love, but another thing that's really helpful to begin to love someone is to begin a journey, and it's to begin a journey that you're not in control of. And that combination is really freeing because, you know, with our control-obsessed world, it really helps to know that as I begin to love, as I endure in love, I don't control this. Also, it's not just a journey, but there's a shape to the journey, and it mirrors the shape of God's love for us.
Through Jesus
Christ.
Jesus. Paul Miller, I've known you for 30 years, probably. You're a man of charts. You're, by nature, a teacher. You actually have a little chart for this, don't you?
Yes.
You better, somehow, to a radio listening audience, you better explain your chart.
Okay.
So we'll visualize this now.
All right. See, you know, picture the letter J.
All right.
And you begin with the life of Jesus going down to his death and up to his resurrection. And that pattern, that's Philippians 2, who though was in the form of God, didn't count equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the form of a servant, became obedient to death, even death of the cross. And so you're going down the J and you're going up into resurrection. Now, there's some things about the J curve. This is the shape of love. So as I hit difficulties in the work of love, if the J curve, if his life maps my life, I'm not so much thrown by the suffering that's in love.
And there will be suffering.
Yes.
If we're to follow the pattern of Jesus Christ,
right,
which we're called to do,
yes,
there will be suffering in this
so
life.
So I expect suffering. But,
yes.
But the thing is, there's no non-suffering exit from this life.
It just, that sounds cruel, Paul.
It's just a description of life. Any Buddhist or Hindu or
is going to experience it, that.
Well, they'll tell you that. I mean, mm-hmm, that's why they want to destroy, you know, the Buddhist mind wants to eliminate the self. They're very aware that life is suffering. As a follower of Jesus Christ, I just don't want to have the gospel to be the foundation of my life. Then what this does is it's an entering into the pattern of the gospel. So the gospel has a shape to it. It's a journey, mm-hmm, that I enter into it. And there's no better way to live, because in this journey, it kills my ego, it kills my will, and out of that comes the beauty of Jesus. Here's a quick example.
All right.
Okay. I'm doing a seminar, 500 people in it, a couple months ago, and we have three roving mics, and I'm doing a lot of interactive questioning. And so you get, and there,
a
there,
lot
there
of people
were,
like me, yeah, just and throwing there was, you questions.
Right. Then. And all there right. was one person in the audience who maybe hadn't been listened to much and went to the mic a lot. And there was,
there's you always know, one of those,
you know, so there were, and this person's comments really didn't have too much to do with my questions.
Right.
And so it made it a little awkward. And the pastor came up to me at the end of Friday night and said, that won't happen Saturday. I've talked to this person. And I thanked him because that was a gracious thing for him to do. But I said to him, it really is good for them to see me patient with someone who's messing up the seminar.
Right.
Because it's a mini entering into the sufferings of Christ. So her messing up the seminar allows Christ to be displayed in my patience of her, that I can value her as a person, even though she's messing up the seminar a little bit. So that the beauty of Jesus can, because that's what we're going for, mm-hmm, is the mm-hmm, shine of mm-hmm, Christ through mm-hmm. us. And he shines at the bottom of the J curve.
And that's really the only way that life is worthwhile.
Yes. Yeah. So I get a chance to display Christ. And it was like the pastor had never heard of this before. You know, as opposed to having the perfect marriage or the perfect child.
Right. The disruptive person in church, you're going to move them out if they don't want to learn.
Of the J curve, where I'm in the death of Christ, where I'm stuck for the next 40 years of my life, the rest of my life, in a mm-hmm. with a spouse who doesn't treat me with dignity, that as I love that spouse only because of the work of Christ. It's not an energy I have on my own. It comes mm-hmm. through faith in Christ. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about self, you know, that this is somehow my will is able to make this happen. This is only through the power of Christ. But as I do that, it out of that comes the beauty of Christ in me.
Mm. If you just joined us, you're listening to Paul Miller. We're talking about how to live a loving life. That's the name of his new book, In a World of Broken Relationships. Paul, there is something we have not even mentioned. You have someone else in your life. The Lord blessed you with 6 children.
Right.
Kim is your autistic child.
Yes.
Adult child now,
right,
but still living with
right.
you.
Yep.
And will always live
yep.
with you.
Yeah.
That hasn't been easy, and I know you would not call Kim a negative in your life, and yet sometimes it's tough.
Yes, it is tough, but there is something about this whole idea of the J curve. I mean, we really are on the resurrection side of Kim, and it is like when people will talk about suffering in your life and they'll mention Kim, I will often be thrown by what
right,
are you talking
right,
about?
Right.
I mean,
you're so far beyond that at
well,
this
it's
point,
not so much
but...
far beyond it. It's she's a joy
yes.
to have, and her life, I mean, she loves life.
Mm-hmm.
She's filled with, you know, she worships at the shrine of Disney, you know, and she'll thank God for the latest Disney movie at breakfast when we have our prayer time together. She's
precious.
Just so sweet. I mean, I love what comes out of Kim. And uh-huh. it's often in the big things like that that we'll come to grips with them. But where people tend to struggle is the driver who cuts them out in traffic, mm-hmm. Is the critical spouse, it's every one of those is an opportunity to have, and that's why I call the book A Loving Life, so that love describes my whole life. Mm-hmm. Which is, I love the...
And that's been a theme of yours for years.
Well, and by my, I mean sort of a generic me, but right. I really want it to be me.
But now, I didn't get you to tell a Kim story, and I wanted you to tell a Kim story, Paul. It hasn't always easy and hasn't always
been
easy.
Well, here's a Kim story.
All right.
I'll just jump into this.
Okay.
I mean, here's, you know, an example of the pattern of Kim and what God has done in this whole work of love. When I started, I wanted to write a book on Jesus. I'd never written a book, and this was a number of years ago. It was in 96, and I just actually went to pray about it, and immediately this thought came to me, was how can you speak about me when Kim doesn't speak? Mm-hmm. And it was a challenge from mm-hmm. the Spirit to me on integrity. Because the book I wanted to write was on love. And there's an area, Paul, in your life of love that's missing. And I knew exactly what it was. And I was immediately convicted. She has a speech computer that had been sitting on the shelf for 3 years. It's got 126 icon keys on it. And it's just wicked hard to learn. And because it's verbs and you have to learn these patterns of these hit patterns of these icons. And it just, we gave up on it.
And most people would think an autistic daughter could not learn to use this keyboard.
Yeah, and there was like, I wasn't sure she could learn it. That was part of it. You're right, Charles. And so this is where these journeys start, you know, and the work of love is these journeys. And this journey, like many journeys of love, begin with conviction and or commitment. And I put aside plans to write this book on Jesus, and I prayed, well, Lord, show me how to do this. And a couple weeks later, a flyer came in the mail from the manufacturer of a speech computer camp in New Jersey that we went to, Kim and I together, and just a secular camp. And I learned from this speech therapist there are some things I could do to help Kim to learn it, like having her speech computer present at every meal. So when we were at restaurants, she would pray. And our kids were teenagers at that time, which was just wonderful because, Kim, the volume might be really high on it. And you'd hear belting out over the restaurant, Jesus, thank you for the food. And our teenagers are just dying. And I think this is hysterical,
Right.
So we reopened what we call her IEP, her individual educational plan, and asked them to give her speech training every day on this. And over 6 years, she's now fluent. She speaks with me.
Some of our listeners would have even heard you when you were on with Kim on Family Life Today.
Right, right.
And she was speaking with her keyboard Family Life.
She's hilarious. She's funny.
Next time we talk about prayer, we should have Kim on as well.
Yes, that'd be great to have her on. That became a journey for me. And here's where the death and resurrection comes in. You see, in Philippians 2, when it describes all the verbs of what Jesus does are on the humbling death side. Mm-hmm. All the verbs, the action words of resurrection are on God's side. Mm-hmm. And that's we don't control resurrection.
Right.
I can lower myself. I can determine to love you in return if I'm getting no love back, but I can't I can't change how you're treating me. Mm-hmm. I'm not in control in the J curve. I'm not in control in the Christian life. And that's the beauty of it, is that I'm entering into the story of God. And so you wait for the resurrection. You pray for it. Sometimes you can work for it, but it's not. And then God's little resurrection on that is about a year later from when God really spoke to me about not writing that book. A friend called me, someone I didn't, a friend said, Paul, would you like to take a course in writing? And that began about a three-year journey.
You ever wrote and finished the book.
Love walked among us. So it became, and everything God did on that, because it's really hard to get a book published.
Right, yes.
You know, it was all God's verbs of what God did, and I just wrote his the thing he created.
Paul, let me ask you a question that I think a lot of people have. It can be in a marriage relationship, but it can be in a working relationship or some kind of other relationship too. How do you love when you don't get love in return?
A story comes to mind, Charles. Jill and I go every year with our daughter Kim to a Johnny Camp, which is a camp for families with a family member who's affected by a disability. And at this camp, people raise money as short-term missionaries, give up a week of their time, pay, you know, $500-$600 to go to the camp. And it's hard work. It takes time, their money, but it's also kind of rewarding, too, to really be able to love someone and care for them. And this one woman, I'll call her Sue, on the second day of the camp was one of these helpers. And another parent, as far as we can tell, slandered her and said something about her that wasn't true, a parent of a child who had some disabilities. And it became a big drama thing. The camp director was involved, and she was distraught. She didn't think she said this thing that the parent accused her. I mean, the whole thing became a mess.
Absolutely.
And she was just sort of lamenting this. And she's got the rest of the week ahead of her, and a lot of people know about it, and it's just this cloud over your head. And that actually is a lot what happens to a lot of us. You get into parenting or kids and start good, and then you hit a wall. And I said to Sue, Sue, before this happened, you were in a transaction. You were giving of your time and money, but you were getting gratitude. There was a reward of love. And now you're entering into the sufferings of Christ. Now you have to give without reward. Now, Sue, you're beginning to love. Now you're entering into real Christianity, as it were. There's no transaction. And loving like this, where you're not acknowledged, not known, and in fact slandered, is the love of Christ. And then that kind of love strips your ego and your will and your pride. It's just like taking an acid bath to our fleshly desires. And there's an incredible freedom in that love, because you're not living now for people's opinion of you. You really kind of abandon yourself to God. And that's where you meet God.
Paul, this is probably a strange concept to some of our listeners. I serve the Lord, but I expect to get a blessing back from serving the Lord or doing something in his behalf. In a sense, we do. But
and it's not right to expect that and to be thankful for that and want that. We're not talking about masochism or sort of asceticism here. Mm-hmm. I mean, but Paul talks about this kind of love all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, Philippians 2, let this mind be in you which is in Christ Jesus, mm-hmm. Then he describes Christ lowering of himself. And we're okay with Jesus doing that.
But then when it comes
to me. But don't you make me lower myself permanently in a relationship where I'm permanently stuck with a difficult spouse or coworker, you know, but that is entering into the fellowship. And this is, I'm quoting Paul now from Philippians 3:10.
Not Paul Miller,
yes.
Apostle Paul.
Yeah.
Yes.
Paul doesn't just talk about the fellowship of sharing in his sufferings. Paul wants it, because that's where he gets to know God.
We seem to live in a world where love is just so misunderstood, biblical love, and love can go by different definitions. One of the things that the scripture calls us to do is live in community.
Right.
But to do that, we have to have love.
Yep. Community and sort of its small version, intimacy, or its sort of its local version is intimacy, and its larger version is community, is one of the great modern quests. I would actually say it's probably one of the top dominant quests of our culture, is hunting for community. And what people do is they constantly fail at it. No culture is worse at intimacy and community than ours, and no culture tries to get more of it. And the reason is there's a core misunderstanding of how you get at community and intimacy, that you get at community through love, not through by going directly at community and intimacy. So what you get in a marriage, for example, you get both spouses demanding intimacy. And what they really don't even articulate is what they want is their other spouse to create a loving environment by loving them so that you really feel good about one another. Mm-hmm. And in a fallen world, that just doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And occasionally it happens, but in general, you end up with the thorns and the needles and things like that. And it's such an amazing thing. And it's so simple. It's such a simple formula is that you get at community through a dying love. So instead of searching for community, you create community through love. I mean, here's a simple, example.
Give us an example.
You come into a party. You come into a group, a gathering, maybe you don't know many people. The normal question that we have is who do I know here, who I can connect with? That's not a bad way to begin. I'm not saying that's wrong at all or inappropriate.
Corner or cluster
but,
of people.
But in general, the Jesus question, which always decenters community and ends up creating it, is as I come into the room, who's lost, who's alone,
who can I love? And that's who I should go to.
Yes.
In need of love.
Yes. Jesus does that all through the Gospels. He creates community through love. And the whole idea of inclusive community comes right out of Jesus. The idea of inclusive community is just a secularized Jesus. But it's very transformative. So instead of, a lot of people go to church and are always hunting for the perfect church. And again, the joke is don't go there, you'll ruin it. Yes. But as I don't fit in here. I don't care what community you're in. You don't need to fit in. God's calling you to love. And out of that, you then to create new communities. You're a Christian is a community creation machine. In other words, everywhere, I'll take it from Warfield. Warfield says to be a follower of Jesus is to not live one life, but to live 1,000 lives. Mm. It's interesting, the modern self, which is trying to find self, creates the postured self. So I've got the Facebook self. I've got the self with my guys. I've got the Sunday morning self. It's this fractured self. Every sin involves a fracturing of the self. So if you look at porn at night, say you're married and you greet your spouse warmly the next day, you've created two selves. Mm. Or if you gossip about a friend and then see that friend, you've created two selves. There's the friend, what you said behind the person's back, oh, hey, Susie, it's great to meet you, and you feel kind of weird.
You said something totally different.
You've
right.
created two selves. And so the modern, people talk a lot about Facebook creating this false, fun-loving self, And so the modern life perpetuates the fractured self. And the Christian life replaced to become a follower of Jesus is I leave the fractured self behind and I become the multiplied self. So the Christian life is 1,000 journeys, and every time I meet someone is another opportunity to multiply myself in love for them. So I'm constantly hunting for new venues for love.
What are some of the fears that people have with love?
I think one of the big fears that people have is that they'll disappear, because they just feel it in their soul and it scares them to death. And what do they mean by disappear? Let's say your spouse is, but it could be any relationship, but your spouse is just full of themselves, narcissistic. They mm-hmm. relate, and that's not uncommon, right. That everything relates to moi. To quote Miss Piggy, what happens, you feel like you're disappearing in that relationship. Mm-hmm. And I would just say that the work of love, my answer to that fear is that's one of the textures of love, that when you love, you disappear. Mm. And so I love to take our greatest fear and flip it on its head. It happened to Jesus.
Right.
I mean, that the pattern of his, Philippians 2 pattern of going downward into, he's taking on manhood all the way to the cross.
We're back to the famous J curve.
Yeah, the
Paul
J curve.
Miller
right,
here.
Yeah.
So, okay.
And then Jesus continues that all the way in 1 Corinthians 15. Jesus says that when he's finished everything, then he's going to give everything over to his Father. Mm. Mm-hmm. So maybe Jesus is going to be a janitor in heaven. If you really...
We know he's a servant in heaven.
We know that he loves to go low. He loves to love.
Yes, yes.
You know, so he's always... Everything he... Like when he's in Luke 14, mm-hmm. he tells the host, the host has invited all the wrong people, that he needs to go out and invite the poor, the blind, and the disabled. He just doesn't feel good at dinner unless he's got low people with him at dinner. You know,
and in Luke, criminal, yeah. the prostitute,
and Luke 12, he says that at the wedding feast of the Lamb, toward the end of Luke 12, that he is going to serve. I just think that's amazing, mm-hmm. that the bridegroom, the Lord of the universe, is going to wait on the table at the wedding feast of the Lamb. I mean, it just he loves to love. In the book of Ruth, which A Loving Life uses as kind of its core structure.
And that's your new book.
Right. Ruth, after chapter 3, disappears. Mm-hmm. She doesn't say anything else. Mm-hmm. There's something about love that you're so... What's going on behind this disappearing? That you're so focused on the object of your love that you lose sight of yourself.
You disappear.
You disappear. And actually, that's where you're found then. That's when people begin... to see Christ in you, so the you goes, and out of this comes the beauty of Jesus. So as you're looking at Jesus, you forget self, and people then see around you, see self, a new self, and so Christ appears in you. Hmm. I mean, one other example that has confused higher critical scholars is the four gospel writers get this, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They don't want to be known when they're around Jesus. That John doesn't even want to name himself
all the way through.
You know,
right.
That there's something about
beloved.
With something that is so beautiful, so majestic, you want to see that. You want that to be displayed, you know.
Draw no attention
you know,
to yourself
and
as
it's
the
just,
writer.
And it's the mind of Christ. They really got the mind of Christ, so they want to disappear.
Paul Miller with us on Haven Today, A Loving Life in a World of Broken Relationships. Paul, I'm going to give you a challenge right now. You have been exploring themes that are in your new book.
Right.
But you also write this new book with the backdrop with the little Old Testament book of Ruth.
Yes.
So I'm going to give you 60 seconds to see if you can do it. Tell us how the themes you've been explaining to us fit into the book of Ruth.
I would read the book for years, probably once a year, and usually somewhere in chapter 2, my page would be dampened with my tears, because I really understood Ruth's story. Here she gives up her life and love, and God had, in a lot of areas of my life, God had taken me into that story. Here she gives this huge commitment to Naomi, and she doesn't get a lot of love in return. Mm-hmm. You know, the going out to a field alone, without any protection and any knowledge, having no future in front of you. So it's a story of someone who does the right thing when there's no hope. Mm-hmm. And it's a gospel story. And God finds that kind of story irresistible, and he always brings resurrection.
Paul Miller, would you mind just leading us in praying? Well, pray for me, but pray for our listeners that we could have a loving life,
yes.
Live a loving life.
Father, I pray now for the Church of Jesus Christ that it would become a community of lovers, that it would not seek its own life, but it would seek to have its life mapped by the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And I pray, Father, that by your Spirit, that you would give them your power, can only come from your Spirit, the Spirit of Jesus, to enter into, to accept, to embrace the fellowship of sharing in his suffering, and to not pull away from the work of love, and to not shrink from the narrowing of the life of the work of love. And in that journey, Father, to begin this journey, a Jesus journey that's downward into death, and then waits for your resurrection. In Jesus' name. Amen.
Paul Miller, thank you for joining us. Just a blessing to be with you, to have you on the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles. Great to be with you.
Thank you for joining me on Great Stories with Charles Morris, and I'm so glad you were able to spend some time with my good friend Paul Miller. I love his love for Jesus. To hear more interviews like this in the coming year that we have just begun, please remember to hit subscribe or visit us at haventoday.org, where you can sign up for the weekly notices. Remember, we release a new episode of this podcast every Wednesday, so please hit subscribe so you can catch them as they release. And when you have time, visit us at haventoday.org, where you can sign up for the weekly notices. And there you'll also find our daily radio program, Haven Today, our anchor devotional, an online shop filled with Christ-centered resources for your spiritual growth and formation. Links are in the show notes. However you plan to stay connected, I hope you'll join me next time, where again, we'll be sharing the great story that's all about Jesus on Great Stories with Charles Morris.